At those books this evening. We, a few weeks ago, surveyed the kings, looking at the kings of Judah and Israel and trying to learn kind of an overview of those books, 1st and 2nd Kings and 1st and 2nd Chronicles. And tonight I want us to do that with the rebuilding and restoring of Ezra and Nehemiah. I don't know about you, but Old Testament history can sometimes be confusing. And that's why I wanted to survey the kings. And tonight I want us to try to look at this from a broader perspective as well. And so hopefully it will help you in thinking about some of the chronology, thinking about what's going on in these books. I want to begin in 2 Chronicles, the book right before Ezra, because 2 Chronicles ends in chapter 36. I want to read verses 15 through 23. To kind of set our scene for the book of Ezra. The Lord, the God of their fathers, sent persistently to them by his messengers because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place. But they kept mocking the messengers of God, despising his words and scoffing at his prophets until the wrath of the Lord rose against the people, until there was no remedy. Speaking about the people of Judah here, God says, I kept trying, but they kept mocking the prophets. They wouldn't listen to the messengers, and so there was no remedy. Therefore, verse 17, he brought up against them the king of the Chaldeans, that's the Babylonians, Nebuchadnezzar is who that was, who killed their young men with the sword in the house of their sanctuary and had no compassion on young man or virgin, old man or aged. He gave them all into his hand. And all the vessels of the house of God, great and small, and the treasures of the house of the Lord, and the treasures of the king and his princes, and all these he brought to Babylon. He burned the house of God and broke down the wall of Jerusalem and burned all its palaces with fire and destroyed all its precious vessels. The temple of Solomon is being recorded as destroyed here, and all of its furnishings carried away. He took into exile in Babylon those who had escaped from the sword, and they became servants to him, to his sons until the establishment of the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed its Sabbaths. All the days that it lay desolate, it kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. During this Babylonian captivity, when the children of Israel are going to be in captivity, two key books will be composed about that time period, the books of Daniel and Ezekiel. Daniel, of course, being one young man who was carried away and is going to live in Babylonian captivity. And he writes much about, prophetically, about ultimately the kingdom of God will be restored. And of course, Ezekiel, a very difficult book in some ways, but prophetic book, giving hope, comfort, and encouragement to the captives in this faraway land about one day the kingdom being restored. Now, I hope that you can make that out. I know the print may be a little small, but I want to give you somewhat of a timeline. We're looking at between the years 540 to 440 B.C., so 5 centuries before Christ. If you look at these books, you have about 540 time frame, the first Zerubbabel and the first return of the exiles. Chapters 1 through 6 take place. And the events of the book of Esther are going to be covered in this first time period. And then the second section of the book of Ezra, chapter 7 through 10, will involve a second return. And I'll talk more about these return in a moment, which will take place in about 458. If you remember, the book of Esther involves Esther being a Persian queen, rising to the point of being a Persian queen as a Jewish girl in the land of Persia, while the Jews are in captivity. And remember, they are saved from the destruction of Haman. That takes place between the first wave of exiles that return and the second wave of exiles that takes place during this time period of Ezra and Nehemiah. And then the third wave of exiles will return with Nehemiah, and that will be between about 445 and 425 B.C. There's three prophets that are going to work during this time period.
three primary prophets. And they're the last three prophets of your Old Testament. Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Tonight we won't focus much on Malachi. Malachi is the final book of the Old Testament. But Haggai and Zechariah are key to the work of Ezra and Nehemiah. This is often called the resettlement or the restoration. Or in scholarly terms, they call it Second Temple Judaism. Pretty easy term because it involves the rebuilding of the Second Temple. The first temple, Solomon's Temple. The second temple is going to be this temple that's going to be rebuilt by Zerubbabel and Ezra. Now, it will be destroyed, just for a little bit of interest. It will be destroyed, and Herod will come along and build what we call Herod's Temple, which will exist in the days of Jesus and will be destroyed in AD 70. This is Second Temple Judaism. There's three waves of exiles that are going to return. First wave is going to be Zerubbabel, and sometimes called Joshua or Jeshua. Zerubbabel and Jeshua are going to be the religious leaders who are going to take a group back to the land of Israel. Zerubbabel is going to go to rebuild the temple, and Jeshua is going to be the priest who is going to be the leading priest during that time. And that's in chapters 1 through 6 of the book of Ezra, and it takes place in 538 to 535. The second wave is going to be Ezra, who's going to return. Ezra, of course, is a priest, and he is going to return about 458. And he leads a second wave of thousands of people back. And his job, the temple's already been rebuilt. Ezra's job is going to be to restore proper worship. And then Nehemiah is going to return. Remember, Nehemiah is a cupbearer in the king of Persia, and he hears about the walls broken down. And Nehemiah is not a priest, but Nehemiah will return, and he will do the physical rebuilding. Nehemiah is going to be a governor for some 14 years. And Nehemiah is most known, first seven chapters of the book, for rebuilding the wall in 52 days. This is to restore their protection. Now, out of this, I'm not sure exactly the source of this. I mean, I know where I got it, but I don't know that it can be fully verified. But like a lot of statistics, the first part of that is, one author said that out of a possible, and I'll put the word possible in, 2 to 3 million people who were in captivity, Jewish people who were in captivity, the Bible records, because if you read these books, you'll have some long list of those who do return, records, and it puts it at the exact number of almost 59,000, 49,897, who returned to Judea during these three waves. So many of the Jewish population did not return. And this leads to those, all the Jews that were scattered out through the Babylonian captivity. This is one of the reasons why in the New Testament, Jews are scattered all throughout Asia and Greece and all the areas that Paul and the other missionaries travel in. And while that is one reason why there is synagogues, the synagogue will become established during the Babylonian captivity, why synagogues and others exist. All right. I hope you can see that, but that's just a map. This shows you the overall area here. This is, of course, the dark part is the Persian Empire. Shows you how large they were. This is Babylon, present-day Iraq, where Babylon is. And they traveled some 900 miles. Some 900 miles they traveled back to Jerusalem. And that's where their focus is. And it went in these three waves of groups going back to the promised land. Let's look at the book of Ezra. The book of Ezra has as its key theme faithfulness to the Lord and worship. That is, rebuilding the temple and in keeping the law. Let's look at some of the verses from Ezra. Let's note chapter 3, first of all.
chapter 3. This is during the work of Zerubbabel and Jeshua. Let's begin and note in verses 1 through verse number 7, the focus is upon rebuilding the altar. Now, verse number 3, for example, they set the altar in its place, for fear was on them because of the peoples of the land, and they offered burnt offerings on it to the Lord, burnt offerings morning and evening. They kept the feast of booths, as it is written, and offered the daily burnt offerings by the number according to the rule, as each day required in regular burnt offerings. So they first, when they returned, they first set up the altar so they could offer sacrifices. And then second, verses 8 through the end of the chapter, they begin to rebuild the temple. Verse number 8. Now in the second year after their coming to the house of God at Jerusalem, in the second month, Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, the son of Josadak, made a beginning together, and the rest of their kinsmen, the priests and the Levites, and all who came to Jerusalem from the captivity. They appoint Levites, and I'm going to skip down and note down in verse number 10, when the builders laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, and the priests and things are going to be involved. In verse 11, they sing responsibly, praising and giving thanks to the Lord, for he is good, and his steadfast love endures forever. All the people shouted with a great shout, and they praised the Lord because the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid. But many of the priests and the Levites and heads of the fathers' houses, old men who had seen the first house, wept with a loud voice when they saw the foundation of this house being laid, though many shouted aloud for joy, so that the people could not distinguish the sound of the joyful shout from the sound of the people's weeping. For the people shouted with a great joy, and the sound was heard far away. I think that's a really interesting emotional depiction of what must have happened. Think about, some of you older folks can probably relate to this much better than I can, but think about being a young boy, seeing the glorious temple of Solomon, and then seeing the invading armies come in, maybe murder and destroy some of your family, totally raise the temple of God. I mean, just destroy it so that there's not a stone left unturned. Carry the things and the furnishing and treasures back to Babylon and carry you back to Babylon. Spend some 70 or more years in captivity, and then travel 900 miles back. And you think about the emotion that these men and those women must have felt as they saw the house of God being rebuilt. Sadness to think about all they've gone through, but joy to think about where they're at. Very interesting scene. Go over to chapter 7.
Chapter 7, verse number 10.
For Ezra had, this is when Ezra, this is now 50 years later, Book of Esther's taking place, and now Ezra's coming back. And Ezra is a scribe, and his goal is to teach the people. All right? And so verse number 10 is a great verse. For Ezra had set his heart to study the law of the Lord, to do it, and to teach his statutes and rules in Israel. So Ezra modeled what all of us want to model. He set his heart on study, doing, and teaching. And then chapters 8 and following denote them praying the Lord for protection. And as Joe Ben read earlier about when they were traveling and things and some of their journeys, asking God for protection. And then about them offering sacrifices. And then in chapters 9 and 10, there's an issue with intermarriage amongst the Jewish people who have married all of these Canaanite women, or vice versa. And Ezra knows that he has to cleanse this issue with the children of Israel. And so he calls upon them to leave these pagan marriages. And then they proclaim a fast. They confess these sins. And they leave these marriages in this situation. And there's a lot involved in that in chapters 9 and 10. Because of time, we need to move on to the book of Nehemiah.
Well, let me say something about rebuilding the temple first.
The temple begins in 536 to 534. But opposition, which is recorded in Ezra 4:24 through 6:24, stops the work. It's going to take about 7 years to finish the temple. They do 2 years, then they stop for 20 years. And then they're going to spend another 4 to 5 years finishing it. God sends two prophets. Now this is when the prophets come in. It's not our point tonight to study these two prophets, but I want you to know where they fit in. God sends two prophets during this time period. And if you read those prophets, especially the book of Haggai, which is a pretty short book, pretty easy to understand book. The book of Haggai is real simple. Start rebuilding the temple. You are being apathetic. You're being lazy. You're being unfaithful to God because you're not finishing God's house. You're dwelling in houses of cedar when the house of God goes unfinished. And so Haggai says, get back to work. Then there's another prophet named Zechariah. And Zechariah is going to preach the same message, but then he's also going, after the temple's rebuilt, he gives some visions, which some of those visions are a little difficult to understand, but he gives some visions about the coming restorations in the Messianic age.
Work was then resumed after God sent the two prophets. Work was resumed in 520. Remember, when you're dealing with BC dates, that you're going down instead of up. And so work was resumed in 520, and it was completed in about 516 to 515 BC.
So, what does the temple look like? This is a rendition of the second temple and how it looked. Smaller than the first temple, but still a very beautiful building.
Now let's talk about Nehemiah. So the temple is completed, but the city still lays desolate with its walls broken down. Ezra deals with the religious restoration, while Nehemiah will focus on the political and geographical restoration.
Chapters 1 through 7 focus on rebuilding the wall despite opposition.
He comes some 13 years after Ezra and some 94 years after Zerubbabel. If you look at this, I have a couple maps I'll show you. This is going to be the basic wall that they complete, this section here, ancient Jerusalem. And they're going to complete this wall in 52 days. Throughout his longer time as governor, they're going to expand the wall out to here and make it larger. This graph shows the wall as it will be in the days of Jesus, which is even larger. So they were dealing and expanding on this wall from time to time. This is the, if you read the book of Nehemiah, you'll find all these things about the gates and things. And this map puts all the different gates, that the sheep gate and the various gates that are mentioned. It shows you where they are and things of that nature in the city of Jerusalem.
Nehemiah, you remember, will ride around when he first gets to town and survey that and make plans, and then he'll call everybody together and he'll begin the work on rebuilding the temple.
The key theme of the book of Nehemiah is the Lord's protection of his people and their need for faithfulness and worship and holy living. We'll look at a few verses of Nehemiah. Look at chapter 2, verse 18.
Chapter 2, verse 18. And I told them of the hand of my God, and that had been upon me for good, and also of the words that the king had spoken to me. And they said, let us rise up and build. The people are going to work together. Look at chapter 4, verse 6. Chapter 4, verse 6. So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together to half its height. For the people, and this is one of the neat phrases in the book of Nehemiah, the people had a mind to work. Nehemiah is a great testament to leadership, the book of Nehemiah is, and it's also a great testament to what people can do when they work together. Chapter 6, verse 3. And I sent messengers to them saying, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you? That's when Nehemiah had some opposition. Nehemiah said, we will not stop. We're going to finish our project. Church, we need to remember Nehemiah because great things can happen. Number one, when we work together. Number two, when we have great leadership. But number three, we have to remember that we have to persevere. We cannot stop. We cannot come down. And then in chapter 3 or chapter 6, verses 15 and 16, we read about the completion of the wall. So the wall was finished on the 25th day of the month of Elul in the 52 days. And when all of our enemies heard of it and all the nations around us were afraid and fell greatly in their own esteem. For they perceived, listen to this, for they perceived that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. Nehemiah served as governor some 14 years. Nehemiah will also deal with the issue of intermarriage. Nehemiah will deal with some issues of tithing and worship. And Nehemiah will also travel back to Persia some and travel back in some of his record. Nehemiah is a book that basically is like the journal, a firsthand description of Nehemiah himself. One thing we want to note from Nehemiah is that physical work helped bring about spiritual revival. We find that in chapters 8 through 10. Let's draw some lessons as we close. Let's draw some lessons from these books. First lesson I want you to note is that there's a phrase, the hand of our God. It was in the passage that Joe Ben read. It was in the passages that I read. It's found throughout the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. You see here the times that it's found. And the idea is God was blessing us. This is something that though we are facing enemies, though we are fraught with dangers and robbers and thieves, we will persevere because we believe the hand of our God is blessing us. And so often they will talk about God's hand upon us and our faith in God's hand protecting us. The second lesson I would like to note, some additional lessons, is that physical and spiritual coordinate in the service of God. I was mentioning this morning that when we think about projects like our upcoming day camp or vacation Bible school, we think about other service projects that we do, whether it's giveaway day or it's the mission trip to El Salvador. When we do physical things, that whether it may be even some kind of building project or some kind of actual physical service project, these things are not separate from the spiritual dimension of what we do as Christians. But rather, just like in our bodies, the physical is really should be, in our view, connected with the spiritual, and the spiritual should be connected with the physical. So in the work of the church, we should connect what we do physically with what we do spiritually. And oftentimes, if we're struggling spiritually, it might be because we're not involved physically. So we may need to put our hand to the plow and get busy. And we might find revival then in our own heart. The people struggled. This is a big thing too. The people struggled to complete their task. Think about it. They started out. They got the altar. They got the foundation. But then they stopped. They struggled to complete. They waited 20 years. God had to send two prophets, really forecasting danger if they didn't finish. You know, that reminds us of ourselves many times. It's the easiest part sometimes is starting. The hardest part is finishing. We often need encouragement from God, from one another, to stay on task. And then finally, the books of Ezra, Nehemiah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, they teach us that the people struggled with holiness. God's leaders called God's people to live lives befitting their worship and discipleship claims. Throughout these books, you're going to see a lot of things about marriage issues, about impure worship, offering profane, especially in the book of Malachi, offering profane sacrifices unto God, not their best, but the blind and the lame kind of sacrifices, about them being more concerned about their own physical wealth rather than the house of God, about them not paying in their tithes and giving to the Lord. You see, the books focus in upon God's people being holy in their living so that it represents the kind of worship and the kind of claims that they're making.
This evening, I hope that this has helped. It's not been a typical lesson, and that's just like the way the lesson was on the Survey of the Kings. I want to give more of an overview. I hope it's helped you better understand these books that I've often found challenging to understand in my own life in terms of their chronology and where they fit in with the overall Bible. And so this involves the restoration. You know, we in churches of Christ
should identify and like these books because we are a restoration people, right? We focus on the idea of restoring the New Testament church and being the church we read about in the Bible and wanting to go back and worship the way they worship, obey the salvation doctrines the way they obeyed them, to be what the early church was. Well, that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to go back and restore the Mosaic law, try to go back and restore the proper worship. And so this is an Old Testament parallel of what we need to be doing today as well. If you're here this evening and you're not a Christian, we invite you to put Christ on in baptism. If you want to rededicate your life, if you need to be restored, we give you that opportunity as together we stand and sing.
I have decided.